I'm the fifth generation to live in this farmhouse. We originally came from Cork, near 150 or 160 years ago now. But we farmed here for that length of time.
And what kind of farming is it?
So on this farm we have pigs and we have dry stock. Our dry stock is our main enterprise. We've changed over the years from dairy cows to sucklers, and now we have a calf to beef rearing unit in which we rear the calves here and we move them on to other farms that we have near Cashel. We farm 160 acres here in the Glen, and we farm about another 400 over around Cashel. We take everything to slaughter and we kill about 600 animals a year. So here in the Glen of Aherlow, we live in a disadvantaged area. Our land is very much influenced by its location. It's at the foot of the Galty Mountains. So there's an incredible amount of water comes down off the mountain. Our land varies quite a lot. It comes from mountain land through reclaimed land where streams were put into courses over the years down into land along the riverbanks, which is very fertile land but very prone to flooding. It's a farm with a lot of challenges and you have to be very aware of the weather. The farmlands in Cashel then are of a much drier nature of land. They're up or hilly land. There's very little water courses on it, very free draining, and very prone to drought in drier type weather.
Okay, so there's a diverse challenges in both places.
You always look at the weather forecast anyway.
Do you soil test in both farms?
Yeah, we soil test probably once every 5 years. We're very aware of the different nutrient contents of our soil. I mean, essentially all livestock farmers are grass farmers, so our business is to grow grass as efficiently as possible. I suppose the beef men is trying to copy the dairy men's example in how to maximise grass growth and thus reduce concentrate feeding to animals and to improve growth rates and feed efficiencies. Oh, there's a lot of effort being, you know, to make ourselves more efficient. The research coming from Tagish, the National Agricultural Advisory Service, like, is pushing us, you know, to take advantage of what we're good at here in Ireland, which is growing grass. With milder, if we're going to get milder winters, like, the amount of grass we can grow is keeps getting pushed up, you know.
And with regard then to the severe weather events, you know, like we've had the hurricanes, we've had the drought, we've had the storms, we've had the flooding. How does that impact you?
We're not prepared for severe weather events. I mean, you know, you're always going to have a severe weather event. But when you get a year like the last 24 months where you get 8 months of continuous rain. Now, 8 months of continuous rain in wintertime, we can cope with. In this part of the world, because our farms are very prone to flooding due to the mountains, we're not terribly impacted with floods because we know we're going to get them. But 8 months indoors requires an incredible amount of forage to be on hand. And then when you go from that then to a drought straight away, so on land like the Glen of Aherlow, that's heavy, a drought does you no harm. But when you go over to land that's free draining on rock or gravel like Cashel, I mean, drought will set in after 2 or 3 weeks. Just as soon as it goes well in one, you've got a challenge on the other. Lucky enough, I suppose, to have the spectrum that we can move our stock around on that. With weather events, you're always, A, your sheds are getting tested by higher and higher winds. B, I suppose, keeping a surplus of fodder in reserve for all stock is becoming more and more necessary. And C, the more extreme the weather becomes or the events become, the less we're prepared for it. If we got a freeze like 18 that we got in March, if we got that in January, we have none of our sheds are set up for it. None of our, you know, our water isn't very deep enough because we're not used to a continental type freeze. And beyond 1 or 2 weeks of it, I think the whole thing would come to a, we would have a very big problem. Flooding, it's very hard in Ireland to, we've always had rain. So if you're not prepared for rain in Ireland, I mean, you know, how much more extreme it can become, it can probably become a lot more extreme, but we are well set up for it at the minute. You know, we're at the minute here on this farm, like we have all our animals out, but we're putting out a little bit of slurry just to make sure that if it starts raining again, that we can put them in again. So, you know, we're always making that sort of plan for especially for, you know, rain events. We're never not expecting a rain event. But if we get a, you know, if we got an 8 months of a deluge for the summer months, I mean, all bets are off. The Navajo, because you've got a mountain of thousands upon thousands of hectares that's gathering water into a watershed above you, and we're all downstream of it, like, we are very well set up for water. Our cache lands are also about 700 feet over sea level. There's nothing like living on the side of a hill in the middle of a deluge, you know. It becomes someone else's problem. So it's not a particular problem that we overly worry about here. We know to bring our animals up from the rivers if it's raining for more than 2 days. The only thing like we won't be able to cope with, like, is if it continues to rain during the summer months, you know. We can take a week, we can take 2 weeks. If the summers became as inclement as the winters were a year ago, we have a problem.
And have you noticed a big change over the years?
Oh yeah, weather is much milder. I mean, the temperatures, we're here now in March, silage has been cut. We cut silage, we baled silage yesterday. If we baled silage in May, it used to be a big thing. Because we have a weather forecast now that's 5 to 6 days accurate, it becomes much more possible to plan what you're doing. I mean, very few people are trying to make hay anymore. But with much more fertilised meadows, you know, you need that weather forecast to make it possible to save fodder. Technology is helping us because we have a much better idea what the weather is going to be. But we would all definitely say the weather is changing. You know, how much it changes, like mild winters. And then we get, you know, the beast from the east. And then we look at America this year, you know, and they're having the winter of all winters, you know. To rephrase it, technology has made it much more easy to know what the weather is going to be. And because we're better informed, we're probably able to cope with it at the minute. I said, you know, you're always living in fear of getting a cold shock that goes on for a couple of months in the wintertime. One drought is not in a lifetime is not the end of everything, you know what I mean? But if we start getting droughts every year, it'll be, you know, new planning will have to be because, I mean, especially on farms that are dry, like over and around Cashel, there is not a lot of public water supply. There's no streams nearby. Running out of water becomes your biggest nightmare. You know, wells that are coming off groundwater as opposed to, you know, deep aquifers, you know, maybe we'll have to go looking for water that's a bit deeper. But again, we're all coping with it so far. Like, you know, it's fear of the unknown. Because we have such a much improved weather forecasting system, it makes it a bit easier.
And would the farm insurance cover severe weather events?
Oh, sure, look, you insure your sheds. You know, you insure your livestock. Yeah, so farm insurance will cope with X amount. I think I've lost one shed in the storm in my lifetime. You know, the insurance company paid for it. I'm sure though, if sheds start blowing away on a regular basis, you know, that'll all change too, you know. But like with the, you know, we've had a few huge, very big storm events here that in 13 and 14 that took, you know, an awful lot of trees, but our sheds all took it very well. You know, we seem to have a very good insurance companies looking after us. You know, you pay the price and you hope to get the service. But again, all these things can come to a halt if things get worse in a big way, you know. Yeah. Everything is predicated on, you know, normal, you know, things going along year after year in some like a normal fashion, you know. We all think that maybe, you know, we don't know what the changes are going to be. We've had a lot of extreme events. The last 24 months has all felt extreme. We coped with it all. And this is, you know, farming is a profession of coping anyway. There's that little niggle in you going, this is changing. How much is changing? That's what we don't know.
And what about the current agri-environmental schemes?
The EU cap has changed over the years from production-based to a much more environmental base. So here in the Glen of Aherlow, we're in an area of areas of natural constraint. This farm is actually on, we got a mountain to the south and on the east, the west and the north, there's streams and waterways at the other three sides of the farm. That makes the loss very easy to achieve. All our water courses are now protected from livestock. Quite disadvantaged areas like this, the agri-environmental and cap payments are a huge proportion of the income on these types of farms. Whereas the cash lands, then open grassland, nothing really changes. I think as we go along, we're probably going to have to look at putting back in shelter belts and not forests, but just protection, you know, wind, you know, putting in trees and foliage is just to try and break the wind against farmyards and, you know, for livestock, for shelter. We'll have to keep our water clean because, you know, if droughts become a thing, we're going to have to really focus on clean water. Beyond that, you know, it's just pretty much, it's very, very dependent on what part of, you know, the world you're in. Like, you know, what works in one area is not going to have any effect in another area, you know. Farming in the Glen of Aherlow is probably in decline. It's an area of smaller farms, whereas farming in Cashel is probably intensifying, you know, because it's much better land. Glen of Aherlow, it's a very beautiful part of the world. It's probably much more agritourism or anything is going to hit than anything else. Over in Cashel, it's going to be dairying for the foreseeable future, I imagine, is going to be the enterprises. And then, so like we're an enterprise that just spins off the dairy enterprise. We take the beef animals from that are surplus in the dairy herds and we rear them for beef. I don't see anything much really changing in that. Main challenges going forward. We're going to have to change to work with a changing environment. Farm sizes are starting to increase from a smaller base in Ireland, and the efficiencies and lack of labour to cope with larger units, and a very ageing profile in the age of farmers, dealing with the new constraints that will come down the road from environmental. Well, to looking after the environment, making sure that we're doing our bit to keep our own environment pristine, and you know, things will have to change. We've a lot of issues with the withdrawal of antibiotics from the farming industry, due to, you know, the impact on human health from looking after animal health. Anything that can do harm, it might be doing good, but it can do harm as well. And people just, for our own health, for our animals' health, and for our environment, we all have to be much more aware about, you know, the these things and how we do use them for.
And I suppose, you're surrounded here by forestry.
Yeah.
And any issue with forest fires?
We hadn't last year. It's a miracle. I thought it was going to be like Hades around here, you know. there's no arsonists in the Glen of Aherlow anyway, because it was like a tinderbox. I mean, you could light the fields here. It was so dry last year. The grass would burn. I'm amazed that we haven't got a forest fire last year.
Yeah.
I'm just amazed. If you're going to get a drought, if you're going to get 3 weeks. 3 weeks of dry weather in any forest is going to make you a fire hazard. The forestry, it's all a planned forest, so there's fire breaks everywhere. But in a year like last year, if it gets going, nothing will stop it.
And what's your views in planting more forestry around?
Forestry, well managed, not uniform silk and spruce. But forestry is good. If there's an awful incredible amount of land up there that was farmland, bad farmland, it's now in forestry, it's productive. So when they clear a fella forest up here behind the farm, the amount of water that comes down off the mountain is much more when the forestry is gone than when it's there.
Oh, so it makes a big impact.
Oh, it makes a big impact, yeah. The forestry absorbs an incredible amount of water. It slows it down. You've got a big, deep forest bed, you know, as trees get mature. Yeah, so forestry, it's a big advantage up in a mountain. I mean, the more it's up there, the better, you know. As a farmer, I hate to see it spreading down into what was originally the grasslands, but putting in just ordinary spruce, you know, it's fast growing, but it's very monocultural. It doesn't look that appealing, you know what I mean, but it does dry out ground. But I mean, you know, you want forestry then for its recreational uses. You know, when you're not completely surrounded by forest, when it's there, you know, you can go up into it, you can come out of it. You know, it's nice to have your views, be able to see where you are. But forestry is good. A lot more deciduous forest needed. A lot more forest for, you know, for people to use recreationally. I suppose you go to America and you see all the people living in forests, you know. Hard to know, would that be, would people be able to cope with it here with the darker nights? But I mean, trees are lovely to have around you, you know.
Yeah, it's good for the health.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk then about agriculture being an actor in climate change. What would be your views on that?
I mean, yeah, agriculture is a worldwide thing, you know. We have 7 billion people. We have to feed them. Different places have different advantages. Here in Ireland, you know, Ireland is a country that grows grass. That's, you know, livestock, dairy farming is grass farmers feeding grass to something else. Our advantage is to grow grass. We can grow it cheaper, faster. We have an environment that's absolutely made for it. I mean, we have to have an advantage in our dairy and beef industries to produce that sort of animals. You know, our pig industries are small. Our tillage industry supplies our dairy industry. Our agricultural industries complement each other. They're not overly intense, but we have a very small population of Ireland, so we export a lot of our food. We export a lot of our, you know, our food is facing into a European market that is, as long as we're producing things that we produce better than everybody else and at a less cost to the environment, I think that should be acknowledged. I mean, I don't think we're going to start taking into producing food or producing agricultural crops where we don't have a natural advantage. There's no point in changing agriculture in Ireland, you know, for an economic concern if it's the cost of producing it elsewhere is twice. In stopping producing something in Ireland, if it's going to cost twice as much as an environmental cost somewhere else. And, you know, within the European framework, you know, there's a much better understanding of what the environmental cost of what we do is. Going to a, you know, to a third world country or a second world country to take in that product where nobody is examining the environmental cost and only the monetary cost is, you know, is not the right way to go. You know, you want your food or your agricultural product produced for as environmentally and economically viable a way as possible. You know, we have Tagishk as an organ of the state that pumps out agricultural research. It's very good research, essentially, you know, for the ag and dairy industries. It can be a bit one focused in one direction, but you know, it's very good at what it does, which is grow grass as cheaply as possible. For Ireland, we're coming to a big change in the social structure of our agricultural industries, where we're going to lose the age of farmers is getting quite old. On average, it's probably heading for 60 at the minute, the average farmer. We're going to need an awful lot of restructuring finance to change it. And
what do farmers need going forward?
So farmers need, going forward, research from the National Research Organization. Help us, you know, help us find the direction that's most viable to farming. We need governments and EU help to fund the transition that's coming in agriculture from, you know, to a much more environmentally friendly type of farming. And we need policymakers, you know, to smooth the transition and just not to be chopping and changing, you know, every couple of years between this policy and that policy, you know. When you're making changes to policy, you know, you have to be very careful about how you ask, you know, stakeholders to put in input. I mean, everybody can see short term the most viable way for themselves. But this is, you know, this is a, you know, when you change things at this level, like you're changing them for 30, 40, 50 years. And we're living in a very exciting time because technology is changing things for us very fast. So the input, you know, you can have as much input as you like, but you have to be very careful about how you make the changes. You know, changes come about by, the changes that are coming about, you know, and being driven by technology, I mean, things change so very fast. So, you know, you have to, while you make changes, policymakers will have to be very nimble to adapt. While farmers need to have input, you know, there's many other areas that are going to have to input as well.